Today's What Do You Think program is brought to you by your local Huron County Farm Bureau agents, Bill Weitzel in Pigeon, Corey Vollmer and Deb McBride in Elkton, Casey Yon in Harbor Beach or Ubley, Deb Croswick in Unionville, and Tim Fritz in Bad Axe. Farm Bureau Insurance, Michigan's insurance company.
Currently about 11 minutes past the hour of 10 o'clock. Our guest today in the studio, Josh Rogenbuck from the Flower Farm. We're going to be talking about what you need to do in the fall and to get your garden, your lawn, and everything ready for winter so you start off good in the spring, and also some of the workshops and stuff you have coming up. So thanks for being with us today.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Is this an important time in your garden lawn care regimen?
Yes, it's a very important time. Now is when you can do a lot of practices that will really ensure some good health in your plants for future years, whether they're trees and shrubs or perennials that will come back next year. And even for your gardens, your vegetable gardens and the flower beds, now is a good time to really do a few things that will ensure their success next year.
When should you really get into this? Should you wait till there's a frost and things are dying off? Because people like to keep the color or anything they've got going for as long as they can for the bragging rights.
Well, for certain things like pruning trees and shrubs, anything with a woody stem should actually be wrapped up pretty soon. And that goes along with fertilizing them, too. The reason for that is to give them the wounds on your pruning cuts a chance to heal over before winter comes, and that'll keep the moisture and the disease and insects out of those open cuts. And for the fertilizer, the plants need a chance to harden off before winter comes too. So if you quit the pruning and the fertilizing in the next several days, that gives the plants a chance to heal and to harden off and to really acclimate to the cold weather.
I mean, you're talking shrubs and pruning. There's like two schools of this. There's the people who go in there with the clippers and take out a branch at a time, and then there's the people that rev up the electric. Some people in the greenhouse business and such frown upon the latter with the heavy machines because they feel it does more damage, but you get that square look or round look that you're looking for and a lot quicker. Which way is better, and what can be some of the pitfalls?
Well, the selecting individual branches and really picking your cuts when you do pruning is far better for the health of the plant. It, as a rule, you only want to remove about a third of the plant at a time, because that actually slows the plant down. It reduces the vigor of the plant. And if you cut every single branch with a shears, you make them even more vigorous and make them grow even faster. And you'll get we call it a witch's broom effect. If you're constantly pruning and leaving stubs, rather than taking back to a branching, another branch or another bud, you cause adventitious buds to form at the ends, and you have five or six branches all growing out at once. And none of them have very good connective tissue to the plant. And the first time that you have a really heavy snow load or a real heavy wind, those are the first branches to break. So by picking the best branches to remove and leaving the better branches, you're making a healthier plant and a stronger plant.
Is there a way to keep a shrub at a certain size, or are they naturally just going to get a little bit bigger through time? People, you see when you drive around, they have overgrown shrubs blocking windows and everything else, because if you let it go too long and you try and cut back, all you're going to have is wood.
Absolutely, and nothing will grow back from that. Best thing to do is to read the tag when you buy the plants and give them the space that they need. And it takes far less pruning to keep the shape of a plant that has the right amount of space. And it's way more work to try to keep it the size you want if it's not naturally that size to begin with.
Are we kind of getting away from the highly manicured, like English garden type of things, and more into a more natural spread when it comes to our front yard plantings?
I think so. I sell very, very few plants that people tend to hedge. I don't. There's very few plants that you take a shears to anymore, and even the ones that people traditionally shear, the natural look with them is, in my opinion, a lot nicer. And there's a lot of slower growing plants that have a hedged look without having to do the hedging too, that, you know, they only grow 2 or 3 inches a year, and you know, they're just a nice full plant. They don't have to be sheared into a square to look that hedge shape.
And some grow up, some grow out.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
That's another thing to look on the tag about.
Mm-hmm, and it's nice to pick some of each and have a good mixture in your yard.
And some are evergreen, and others will drop leaves or give you other things you might have to clean up in the fall. So those are other considerations.
Yep, and you have to consider how much time you have to put into it, too. If you have a whole bunch of plants that are going to need that kind of care in the fall, all the cleaning up, then you have to realize that it's going to take a couple hours to do that.
Do people tend to plant them too close to the house and
yes,
such?
Yes, they do. They want an
you,
instant
you
effect.
You see them when you go up to them, and they're like nice on the front and the back. They're all wood because they're trying to keep it away from the house because you need some breathing room for the house and the plant, and mm-hmm. it ends up just being empty back there.
Yeah, the more space... The more natural space you can give them, just read the tag, the better off you're going to be. It's a lot less work this time of year or any time of the year if they have the kind of space they need.
And how do you know what's a good mixture? I mean, you know, you see people and it looks so nice, and then other people, they're nice plants, but they're maybe not where they should be. Is there like a rule to it? You know, the high ones probably in the back and the lower ones in front. That's kind of obvious because you want to be able to see them. But, I mean, do you need to... go high and low and mix or have like a wave or something like that?
It helps to know your style a lot because landscaping and yard work, you know, the ornamental type things should all be kind of to your style, and you should design it just like an indoor room. You should think of, well, this plant's going to give me a wall, and this one's going to give me a floor, and this one's going to, you know, possibly be a ceiling with a shade tree or something like that. And these one, you know, these kinds of plants would provide some color and some brightness, you know, like adding a light fixture that would provide some drama in a house. If you think along those same lines as if you were designing and decorating an indoor room, it's not too hard to pick. And if you don't have a natural sense for that kind of designing, there's people like me that can help you too. I personally
low
do.
In front of the front window, a little higher maybe on the bedrooms that are higher windows, but you have to make sure what you're growing isn't going to become a hazard when you can't even look out your own windows anymore.
Yeah, you should think of it as an extension of the indoor rooms. They should be just as much a part of the indoor rooms as the drywall and the carpet are, because you're looking out at them all the time, and you're doing that more often than you are outside looking in.
And not all plants are green. If you want yellows or reds or stuff, there are plants available that can mix the colors up and not make it one wall of green.
Absolutely. And it's all to your style. Some people like all green, too.
Mm-hmm. Some people don't like the picker bushes where you try to prune them and you get a fistful even through the gloves.
Yeah, but those are quite slow growing, and quite often they don't need much pruning either. So all depends on how much space you have and what your tastes are.
And what about the undercover? Do you need to do something around bushes and shrubs? A lot of people have stone or mulch around them trying to keep some of the weeds down. Is that a good practice? Does it retain too much water maybe, and then they're going to have rotting problems if it stays too moist all the time?
Well, this time of year is a great time to go through. If you have stone, this is a great time to go through and clean up all the leaves that have fallen off and get rid of any dust and dirt that are there. That reduces any homes for insects and disease to overwinter.
Because those leaves break down and then they get in between the rocks, and then you've got dirt under the rocks, and you've defeated the whole purpose of the mulch and maybe a barrier under there.
Yep. And so if you go through with a leaf blower and clean everything out now, or just manually pull it out, it makes a big difference in the health of the plant for next year. And for people that have mulch, I like to just do 3 or 4 inches of mulch and keep it consistent all the time. If it's kind of a nice fluffy layer, it won't necessarily hold too much moisture. It actually would help wick it up in the winter time. And I try not to recommend putting plastic underneath of it either, because as the mulch breaks down, it will be a compost, and the plastic underneath will perch that on top, and the weeds will grow on that better than ever and kind of defeat the purpose.
Plus, any rain that falls on it has got no way to get through, really, to the ground if it's solid plastic.
Mm-hmm. And back to the disease and an insect issue, if you have a real nice fresh layer of mulch all the time, that kind of suppresses those things, too, rather than having all the dead leaves and everything be on top of the mulch to break down into the mulch.
There are natural and, well, unnatural mulches available. I've heard there's even, like, crumbled up tires or rubber or something. Are the natural ones better, but maybe a little more work because they will break down, whereas the others tend to last longer? Six of one, half a dozen of the other?
I would say it's six in one, half a dozen in the other. It's a little bit more maintenance, a lot less cost up front with the mulch. But it's constantly breaking down and providing nutrients to the plants beneath them. If you did good soil and had some nice organic matter underneath of the stone when you put it on, it's a lot less maintenance with the stone, too. I personally use mulch more myself to kind of improve the soil because I don't like to, you know, dig everything out and start over with new topsoil every time I go into a landscape.
And it seems like the mulch would be better if you were putting annuals, say, around the front. You don't have to keep pulling the rocks back and getting down to real soil to put them in, as opposed to mulch where you can just go down far enough, you're into dirt.
Yeah, very much so. And it's easy to remodel if you're not happy with even perennial plants or shrubs. You can move them around, where with the stone you're kind of stuck with the first design unless you want to cut through the plastic all the time.
Doesn't sound like fun.
No.
So you get those set. What do you need to do for the perennials? Do the annuals have to come out, the ones you put in every year? Do you need to take them out? Do they wait till spring, or do you foster disease that way?
It's a good idea to tear out the annuals and the vegetable plants, too, that are not going to come back another year, because they do foster insects and disease. And it's a good idea to just, if they're healthy at this point, to put them into a compost pile, and you can reuse them that way next year as compost. But if you left them just the way they were, then there's an excellent chance of lots of problems that you're introducing for next year. For the perennials that come back every year, it's a good idea to cut them back after the frost kills them, too. There's
just
a few
to the
exceptions.
Ground, you don't have to go deeper than
no,
that.
No, you
just
don't dig
the
them
ground.
Out. Just, you know, an inch or two above the ground, so there's kind of stubs left behind. And then a few exceptions would be like the ornamental grasses and the sedums, because they look beautiful dried against the snow. They get the nice seed heads and the leaves dry very nicely, and they kind of hang on to the plants too, so, you know, it's not nearly as much disease and insect trouble with those few exceptions. But for the most part, it's a good idea to cut the perennials off when the frost kills the leaves.
Now, here comes the question, bulbs. What do you do with bulbs? I know people who take them out. I know people who leave them in and hope for the best. What's the normal rule? Do you end up getting more plants eventually if you leave the bulbs in, because they are going to try and propagate themselves? Mm-hmm. Or do you take them out, and if you just want that certain look, there's a tulip here, a tulip here, that type of thing?
Well, they do divide and multiply, at least the hardier ones. Are always coming back another year if you leave them.
Depending on how cold it is and the type of bulb and the area we're in and all that. Because there's all those charts with, you know, you're in zone 6 and you're in zone 5 and these grow here and these don't very well.
Yeah, and we're in zone 5, by the way. So, you know, zones 3 to 5, anything that says that, they're good plants to plant here. But the tulips and the daffodils, a lot of people... They're not very expensive, and they're very easy to put in, you know, every fall. A good time to plant them is pretty soon, you know, like the first good frost. That way they won't try to grow yet anymore this year. They'll kind of stay in their dormant state.
So the ground is already a bit cooler, so it's not sensing that it's spring and I need to come up.
Exactly. And, you know, they will a lot of times come back if you like the look, but they're not so expensive that you're married to them. If you're tired of what they look like, they're not that hard to kind of pull out after they're done flowering next spring.
Do they come back as nice? Because sometimes things don't always come back the second time around as nice as the first shoots were.
Yeah, sometimes with, especially tulips, the second generation a lot of times isn't nearly as robust as the first generation was.
Because they're kind of bred for that one big pop.
Mm-hmm, very much so. But a lot of the varieties that we pick in our garden centers around the area, we try to pick ones that very typically do come back year after year.
Common mistakes, people putting them in upside down, too deep, not deep enough. I mean, is there a science to this?
There's a little bit, and that's another one of those things to read the tag and read the directions when you buy them, and it'll save you a lot of work later on.
Now, if they tell you 6 inches or 3 inches under, say, is that under the level of the ground, under the level of mulch? I mean, people are going to be thinking, wow, this looks pretty deep, but if you've got 3 inches of mulch around it, it's not that deep.
Right. I would use, if it says 6 inches and you've got 3 inches of mulch, I would probably go 4 or 5 inches into the soil and take the mulch into account a little bit, but not so much. I wouldn't use all the mulch as my depth because it's so fluffy and airy that when the tulips and the daffodils and all those kinds of things are coming through, they push through very nicely. It doesn't really get held up by the mulch that much.
Okay. And this is about the time to get ready to do these things?
Yes, very soon. We've possibly got a cold enough night in the next couple of nights to have a real cold frost. And after that first frost, the hard frost, that's about when you'd start to plant your tulips. And then
is that when the marigolds go?
What's that?
Is that when the marigolds go?
Yeah, that's another good indication, is the end of the marigolds in the geraniums. The marigolds and geraniums tend to hold up really well until that really hard frost, and then they're done.
And then you look out the next morning, and you can already see the wilt.
That's excellent time after that to plant bulb plants. And you can plant them up until probably the middle of November when the ground really starts to freeze.
And are they pretty good at getting them right as far as what they are when you buy them? Because you can't tell from the bulb whether it's red, it's yellow, it's pink, whether it's, you know.
Yeah, they're never mixed up very much. They come in the bins with the picture on the bin, and as long as there isn't too many customers that go into the store and mix them around in the bins.
Oh, that one's not good, and they put it in the wrong bin, and you're getting red instead of yellow. But
for the most part, they're well separated. If you go to the Netherlands and check out the way they grow the bulbs, it's like 80 acres of red tulips and 100 acres of yellow daffodils, and you know they only do one crop at a time and package them at one time, so it'd be really difficult to mix them up before they ship them to us.
If you go to the grocery store and you look for vegetables, you check them out. Should you do this with bulbs? Do you need to look to see that they're viable, that they're not either too dried out or they're already sprouting or something that it's going to give you grief?
Right. If they're sprouting just a little bit, it's not the end of the world because they'll slow down when they get out into that cold weather. If they're sprouting too much, then a lot of their energy is already spent in that sprout, and that's not a good idea. And if they are kind of mushy, then they may not sprout very well when springtime comes around either. And dry is the same way. If they feel really, really light, there's not much energy stored in them for next year.
Yeah. Dry as an onion skin, you're probably not going to do as well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Why don't we pause for 60 seconds and we'll be right back.
What do you think of when I say the word retirement? Sunny days in Florida? A quiet lake in northern Michigan? Your first thought should be your Farm Bureau insurance agent. Farm Bureau has helped out thousands of Michigan people enjoy happier, more secure retirements. IRAs and annuities, a lifetime retirement income, big tax advantages, and competitive interest rates. Farm Bureau Life Insurance Company of Michigan is rated one of the 50 most outstanding life insurers in America. So call your Farm Bureau insurance agent today. Remember, it's not who you call after retirement, it's who you call before that makes the difference. Farm Bureau Insurance, Michigan's insurance company.
Contact one of your local Huron County Farm Bureau agents. Casey Yon in Harbor Beach or Ubley, Deb Croswack in Unionville, Bill Weitzel in Pigeon, Tim Fritz in Bad Axe, or Deb McBride or Corey Vollmer in Elkton.
Michigan, my Michigan.
We are back, and our guest today is Josh Rogenbuck from the Flower Farm. We're talking about getting your lawn, your garden, everything set for winter. Don't want to think about that after last winter, but it is a-coming. One of the most beautiful and, for a lot of people, some of the most troublesome plants are the roses. Do you have to do things at this time of year? Is this the time to trim them back, or do you leave them natural? Do you need to do anything to the ground around them, just so you have a good start next spring?
Well, there's several different factors that play into it. With all roses, now every leaf that falls off, you want to get rid of them. You want to totally remove them from beneath the plant, because roses, as a rule, carry black spot and powdery mildew, and if you allow those diseases to touch the ground and really kind of soak into the ground over the winter time, then they're definitely going to be there in the spring. So regardless of which kind of plant you have, you want to clean up as many of the roses, the leaves, as you can. Sometimes,
if you have that, should you dispose of those leaves?
Yeah,
because you don't want to reintroduce anything.
Put them in the burn pile, or put them in a place that isn't going to be compost for next year. You want to, you know, segregate those leaves from everything else. And that's true for any disease plants. Right now we're having some big issues with maple trees that have black spots on them. And if we can get rid of them, those leaves, somehow without allowing them to be in the yard next year, that'll help next year too. It's not a big health issue with the maple trees for next year, but that'll definitely help for next year.
The molds are like a spore. So if you even have it, you know, on the other side of the yard, if that gets dry enough and they start floating in the air and stick to your trees, the next time it rains, you've got the mold again.
Yep, to a point, absolutely. And then back to the roses a little bit with the pruning idea. If you have roses that are grafted onto a different rootstock, and most of the tea roses are this way, they
need
to be...
You can see a real bump on the shaft where they've grafted. It's pretty obvious if you have them.
Yep, it's a swollen spot, a little bit like a knee or an elbow. And with those, that graft is very tender, and you need to cover up those plants, usually with a rose cone, or if you don't like to do rose cones, you can cover the graft up with some evergreen branches, some boughs for the winter, or mulch. A lot of people will mulch up above that graft, the bud union.
I've seen people use like wire and then they fill it with leaves from the
leaves,
tree.
And sometimes people will do sand or soil. All are good ways just to protect that bud union. And then a lot of times if you're out in the open, a rose cone is a good idea too, because the rose branches, the canes, are very tender too. And by covering them up with the styrofoam, that kind of protects them from drying out in the wintertime too.
Those, though, would require you cutting them back, because you're not going to get a cone that's 8 feet tall to hold a whole
absolutely and you,
towering rose.
I try to tell people to cut them back just big enough to put into the rose cone. And so regardless of whether you cover them or not, the very best time to prune a rose is actually in the springtime, because those canes are tender. If you leave the tall canes up in the air, you kind of can sacrifice that growth to the wintertime, and it'll kill the branches back some, but then you can remove those dried branches in the springtime. Where if you prune them way back in the fall time, then you're still going to have the canes dry out in the wintertime, and sometimes it'll kill it all the way down to the bottom of the plant.
Mm. Now, I heard there was a reason you clip roses at the 5-leaf section, not the 3, because it works one way or another to give you better results next year.
Rose bushes have leaves that come in leaflets, and flower buds grow beneath leaves that have 5 leaflets, and tissue, like the branches and the leaves, come out of buds that are beneath a 3 leaflet leaf. So if you want to encourage more flowering, which is not necessarily the thing to do this time of year, you clip to just above a 5 leaf leaf. And if you want to encourage more tissue growth, then you cut back to just above a 3 leaf leaflet.
So that would mean if you did the 3 leaf, and then you'd get a little vigor into the stem growth before it tries to flower, giving the plant a little more time to recoup from the winter.
And if I was pruning a rose bush at all this time of year, that's where I would cut back, is to just above the 3 leaf leaflet leaf.
In the summer, if you're cutting back, you know, because you've got to deadhead something, go back to a 5, and,
yeah,
then,
and then
you
get more
flowers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. And with roses, do you need to check all this out before you put them in? What kind of maintenance they're going to have? Because I was telling you a little bit before, my folks had a climbing rose, and you really just kind of end of the season just trimmed it back so it wasn't going over the whole yard.
Right. If you want roses that are less maintenance, there are a lot of brands out there. Everybody knows about those knockout roses. And there's other brands that garden centers carry that are on their own root. They're not grafted. And they are varieties that are bred to be very disease resistant and very insect resistant and very prolific with flowering, that are not nearly as much work because they bred them to be that way. They picked the ones that would survive for years and years in a homeowner's yard that the homeowner didn't have time to look after it. And those are pretty simple roses, a lot easier than the ones that are grafted onto a different root. And sometimes you don't get the big super showy, super ultra fragrant rose that way, but you do get a very, very beautiful plant that has some nice flowers on it all summer.
But if you want the fragrance, the less hybrid it is and the more natural, the more of a natural rose flavor you're likely to get?
I would say so. Sometimes the hybrids always pick some traits and leave behind others, and sometimes they do pick for a fragrance, but there's not a lot of the really hybrid roses that have a lot of fragrance. They've picked them for other things.
You notice that when you order a dozen roses for your sweetheart or whatever on Valentine's Day, they look beautiful, but they just don't have the smell that you associate with some of the other roses that you have in a garden.
And there are so many beautiful red rose bushes that you can buy that do have a nice fragrance to them. But in the flower shop, we have to have ones that hold up for a good amount of time and have a nice straight stem and a good petal count. And, you know, we did kind of pick for certain traits with those to have nice ones in the flower shop.
Do people make mistakes with roses as to where they place them? Because, you know, they may want them close to the house where you can see them, whereas that might allow for more shade and more problems with then disease and not drying the plant out properly.
Yeah, a lot of disease issues happen in any kind of plant where the leaves don't have a chance to dry out in the morning after a dew or after a rain. And if the leaves are constantly soaking wet, that introduces a lot of different disease and insect problems, and roses are very prone to that. And if you would like to have a big rose garden, you want to have it in a place that gets a little bit of breeze to dry out during the day.
The place near the house might be nice for the overwintering part because it tends to be a little warmer next to the house when the sun's hitting the brick or whatever, but then come summer, it's just maybe too wet and you have your problems.
Yeah, and it's good to pick somewhere kind of in between.
And you want it where you can see it, because it's the whole point.
Yeah.
Do you buy the roses based on what you want to do with them, if you just want to see them, or if you want to pick them, then you maybe go for the more hybrid stuff that looks better in a vase?
Yeah, that's, you kind of have to ask those questions when you're looking. And a lot of the nice plant tags now will have a little picture that has a vase and a pair of scissors that shows you that it's a good cut flower, or it would have a picture of a hedge if it's a good one for naturalizing with, you know.
And check for zone 5.
Yes.
if you miss that one, there's not much you can do about changing what zone you're in and the weather you can expect. May get through 1 year, but then you've really invested in it, and the next year it's gone.
Mm-hmm.
What about your lawn? This time of year, people are getting the urge, man, I'm going to have to cut it one more time.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's good to have a good crisp leaf before you quit mowing for the winter. And by that I mean it's good to quit mowing at a certain point so that the leaf has a chance to heal, just like you're pruning your trees and shrubs. The leaves on the lawn still need a little bit of a chance to heal before winter comes.
Every blade is a leaf.
Right. And that'll help to help to keep the disease and insects out of the lawn too. And so sometime in the middle of October, maybe another couple, 3 weeks, is time to kind of wrap up the mowing too. You can mulch your leaves into the grass. That helps to promote good health, as long as the leaves don't have lots of disease and insects in them too. And kind of if you're going to have lots of leaves from the trees on the lawns later on, it's a good idea to maybe raise the mower deck up so that you're just chewing the leaves up rather than cutting the blades on the grass. And if you have a nice crisp lawn blade or grass blade that's there, that will be better for the health of the plant later on too.
Is it also then important to keep having a good sharp blade on that mower, because that gives you a clean cut as opposed to tearing?
Absolutely. That's one of the most important things you can do for your lawn. And
if you do it now, you have to do it in the spring, because it doesn't get dull over the winter.
Right. And it's good to fertilize this time of year, too, because the fertilizer would go down into the plant and be stored up for next winter. It would help build up the roots and get a good, strong plant that would survive the winter well and be really sturdy in the springtime.
Is there a better type of fertilizer? Do you need slow release for winter, or do you need quick release so it gets in there and it's not sitting there on the top ready to burn in the spring?
Well, the most important thing is to not have a lot of nitrogen this time of year. It's important that you're not making your grass grow like crazy, and the nitrogen does encourage a lot of top growth on the plants. So low nitrogen and maybe a little bit higher phosphorus than you would feed with other times of the year. And it is good to have a little bit slower released one, and that's where some of the kind of the new organic ones are coming in, because they're microbe released rather than water released. And so if there's still some activity in the soil, the plants would take up the nutrients that's in that fertilizer, but then when the ground freezes, then that fertilizer is done until springtime.
I was telling you before the show that my dad kind of freaked out. He lives in a condo, and they left all the leaves on the grass, and he was, oh, I got to get that off before, so I won't have a lawn next year. Is that a truism, or is that, or is it maybe a little overkill? You'd really have to have 3 inches of leaves on there, like mulch, in order to kill it off.
Well, you certainly don't want a blanket of leaves. You don't want an inch thick, you know, almost tarp of leaves over across the lawn, because that'll suffocate it. Your lawn is still going to do a lot of the things it does all winter. It's still going to respire. It's still going to need to breathe. And if you have, you know, inches of leaves covering every single speck of lawn, then you're going to want to either mulch them or rake them off, because that'll really affect the health of the lawn plants. But if, you know, there's a few leaves left on the lawn for the wintertime and there's spaces in between and the grass clearly has a chance to breathe, then that's not the end of the world either.
Anything you need to do to your lawn in the fall? In the spring, a lot of people thatch and stuff to try and get some of the stuff out so it looks greener, I guess, in the beginning. But maybe that's not even a good thing. But is there anything like that you need to do in the fall?
Well, for people that thatch their lawns with a thatching mower and they irrigate the lawn so it's green constantly in the summer, it doesn't have that little dormancy where it gets hot and dry. Those kind of people,
we call it July.
Yeah. Those kind of people it's not a bad idea to do a little thatching so that some of there isn't a layer of thatch, just like those layer of leaves, that thatch layer of old grass blades can sometimes suffocate the lawns too. But for the most part, our lawns around here, we don't irrigate them, and we don't all use a thatching blade on our mowers. It's not always very necessary for your lawn. It doesn't ever get that thick of a thatch layer underneath.
Does that result later on in the problem where your lawn seems to be sinking away from your sidewalks and your drive because you're not putting back into the soil, you're just taking out and going?
Over a very long period of time, if you're totally removing all the grass that you cut off, yeah, you're kind of taking the carbon and stuff away from the lawn. And
it's feeding on the dirt, and the dirt's going away, and it's getting lower, and your driveway is staying up there.
It'd take a very long time for that to happen, but it's definitely possible. So it's a good idea to put some of that stuff back into the lawn, and unless you have a really thick thatch, then it's a great idea to leave that stuff there.
Okay. Any other things we need to know about perennials? Are they doing what we need to do with them? I mean,
well, a little
trimming, a little.
After we were talking about earlier, after that real hard frost, when the leaves die back, it's a good idea to cut them off, and that removes any insect and disease homes for the winter. And you can give them a little shot of fertilizer this time of year too, so that they have lots of energy stored up for next year. Beyond that, the real tender ones, maybe you can give a little more mulch for the winter. They're pretty good to go. That's the nice thing about perennial plants. They're pretty simple.
Any tips for the upcoming holidays? Do putting lights on your trees and that stuff stress it in any way? Are you, because it's maybe frozen out there and doesn't really necessarily want you bending it all around to get lights on it.
Well, I'd say a good rule of thumb is if it's going to pull the branches down, then you probably have too many lights on it. But no, it's really not a bad thing. Plants are, they're losing the weight of the leaves if they're a deciduous plant, and the weight of the Christmas lights is not going to hurt a lot. They're kind of used to holding up things. One other little tip, though, about trees and shrubs this time of year. If you have cedars and white pines, those kinds of plants are pretty sensitive to the road salt and sidewalk salt. It's a good idea this time of year to wrap them in some burlap or something that'll protect them a little bit from the salt spray.
And you have to go over the entire thing, or does that generally only go up about 8-9 feet and then you don't have to worry about a 30-foot tree getting it on the top?
Yeah, I wouldn't worry about a 30-foot tree, but kind of as high as they would, the snow flies when the truck comes through. If you are a little bit observant, you can see how that works.
Is that one reason when you put a plant in, you should take these things into account? Because if you're planting too close to the road, even a tree that can handle it is constantly getting bombarded with big chunks of ice and snow and stuff, and that can break branches or bend them, and you end up with the lower part of the tree not looking as nice as you'd like.
Yeah, plants are a lot less maintenance if you put them where they want to be the day you plant them. There's no question about it.
Okay. I understand you've got some workshops coming up. I wanted to make sure we touch a little bit on those as we get a little close to the end of our time here.
We have a few kind of horticulturally related make and take workshops this fall. There's one where we have a mini pumpkin wreath, and we have another one that we call the Pure Michigan Autumn. It's a door swag that you can hang on your door with lots and lots of stuff from Michigan. Really, really pretty. Another one that's a pumpkin tower that we make into a little man or a woman. And the last one seems to be really popular, where you plant some fall bulbs in a pot, and we overwinter the pot in our coolers until sometime in February. And in the middle of winter, when you have the blues from being such a long winter, you can come and get a basket full of fully blossoming plants.
And then when they're done blossoming, you can put them outside in the ground,
and
have them again next year.
Absolutely. Enjoy them for years and years.
And they can contact your flower farm to find out when they are and how to get involved.
Yep. They're in the mornings and the evenings on several different days for each one. Lots of options to get each one in if you want them. And they're a pretty good cost. And if you take in several of them, we give you a good break on the quantity, too.
Anything else we need to talk about?
Well, the other big news right now is the corn maze. We have our giant robot corn maze going on now every day, during our business hours, 9 to 5 Monday through Saturday and 11 to 4 on Sunday. And we also have nighttime ones. For the next couple weekends, it's going to be a moonlight one where you bring out a flashlight if you want to on Friday and Saturday night from dusk until 10. And then it'll be haunted the last three weekends in October.
And that'll be bringing out the zombies.
Yeah. And the haunted robots, since it's a robot maze this year. And the haunted one is actually a fundraiser for several area nonprofits that help us with the work of putting it on. They get a nice cut from every customer that comes through. So a nice way for us to give back to the community, and for a really easy way and fun way for them to do some fundraising, too.
So fall isn't necessarily the end. You have things you can do.
Lots of fun stuff to do in the fall.
Well, I appreciate you taking time with us today, and good luck with fall and winter. Hopefully we won't have last winter to deal with. Did that cause a lot of problems for people?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of people replacing their plants that didn't make it through such a tough winter.
Are there things you can do? Can you make sure there's enough snow cover on stuff? It isn't blowing off? Or is there anything you can do other than just cross your fingers and hope for the best in the spring?
A long, cold winter like what we had this past one, I'm not sure there's a lot you can do. And I don't know that there's going to be too many more like that again. But we'll see.
Oh, famous last words from your mouth to God's ear. Thanks for being with us, Josh.
Thanks for having me.
Our guest today on the program has been Josh Rogenbuck from the Flower Farm. I do want you to stay tuned. Coming up at the top of the hour, we will clue you in on all the latest in the news.
Today's What Do You Think program was brought to you by your local Huron County Farm Bureau agents. Bill Weitzel in Pigeon, Corey Vollmer and Deb McBride in Elkton, Casey Yon in Harbor Beach or Ubley, Deb Croswick in Unionville, and Tim Fritz in Bad Axe. Farm Bureau Insurance, Michigan's insurance company.